Head seminarist osavõtjad, mul on suur rõõm tervitada siin Stephen Clifti ja ma väga loodan, et tema ettekandest, mis saab olema elav ja interaktiivne, kus ma palun kõigil kaasa lüüa, saab olema palju kasu ka Eesti teemafoorumite kaasajastamisel ja tööle panemisel. Kui me hommikupoole saime teada, et veebikeskkonnas ei ole ilus anonüümselt ja impulsiivselt ropendada ja samuti, et niipea kui inimesed peavad esinema oma enda nime all, siis tekib hirm, olgu siis lasteaia juhataja ees, kes leiab, et kasvataja küll ei ole see inimene, kes haridusteemadel sõna võiks võtta või siis oma tööandja kaaserakondlaste või kelle iganes teise ees. Siis mis meil nüüd üle jääb, et arutame tähtsalt teemade üle oma nime all, viisakalt abstraktselt, mis sellest kõigest kasu on, küsib kodanik. Ma väga loodan, et Stepheni ettekandest me saamegi teada, kuidas panna foorumid käima, me saame teada, mida võiks kodanik kasulikuna näha niisuguse suhtluse puhul. Stephen, palun.
Well, thank you so much for the first set of presentations. I was explaining that this is now an expert group. I often am invited in to present to folks who maybe haven't ever participated in an online issues forum or online forum, and here we have real participants and real leaders in the room. So just before I start the slides, a short introduction. My name is Stephen Clift. I come from Minneapolis, Minnesota in the United States. I'm excited to be in Estonia. This is now my 26th country that I've spoken in about e-democracy. So I was stuck at 25 for a long time, and so I'm very excited to be here. I used to work in state government. There's my son, Liam. I used to work in state government and run the website back in 94 to 97, but I also started this nonprofit called, or NGO, called edemocracy.org. So back then I was government by day and citizen by night. And often when I present, I sort of talk about what governments can do to listen to people online and talk about online consultations. You heard a bit about that. But today I'm going to focus on the citizen perspective, on issues forums, what we can do to bring people together to have a voice online. During the Q&A, obviously, I can put on a governmental hat, but I'm often coming from a citizen perspective. So let's just get into this, and the first sort of 40 minutes or so, I have a presentation about issues forums, some videos. Feel free to raise your hand at any moment and interrupt with a question or a comment. That is absolutely fine. Then we're going to have a little exercise in the middle, discussion of sorts, and then the second part will be questions and answers, and I have a few more slides where we'll go in depth into online facilitation. So everyone who leaves here will be ready to facilitate a forum. So imagine that you are Annie Young. You're an elected park board member in Minneapolis. You got home at night, it's 10 p.m. at night, and you've just returned from a park board meeting where they decided to bring in Dairy Queen, a large ice cream chain, kind of like McDonald's, to run the concession stands in the premier, the most beautiful public park in the city. And you didn't like the decision. You lost the vote. And so you go on to this forum called the Minneapolis Issues Forum with hundreds of citizens, and you post a question. We'll actually hear it in Annie's words.
For me, it was just like I wanted to check out my feelings.
A lot louder than that.
Was I crazy?
Can you hear that?
Did people think it was okay if this large ice cream maker came into our concessions, or what did people think?
That's Japanese. You can ignore that.
多数の意見を反映していないとジョンソン議員は考えているのです。I
believe it's not a negative thing
that the internet discussion impacted public policy. What I think happens in these types of situations, however, is that the internet discussion carries perhaps more weight than it should.
The discussion on the forum was quite dynamic. Annie Young, an elected official, simply asked a question: what do people think? A lot of people said, bad ice cream. Other people said, hey, you know, give us our soft serve. That's the kind of ice cream. It was pro and con, the decision. The parks had been losing a lot of money, and they weren't able to, as a government, run the concession stands profitably. So discussion came out. It just so happened that the newspaper did not have a journalist at that meeting. They're cutting back on local news coverage. Of course, the day after it breaks on the forum, it's in the newspaper, a headline story in the metro section. 2 weeks later, at the public meeting, it's the most packed public meeting in years for the park board, they reverse their decision and decide not to turn over the concession stands to this chain. So it's an example of where decision-making was directly impacted by this forum. I want to say, however, that that is actually quite rare. But what I will talk about today is how issues forums play a strong agenda-setting role in the community, which is a step before, an important step before decision-making. Ms. Carol Barbara Johnson, she's the council president of the city council. She was actually quite nice on the interview. That was on Japanese national television, this little piece they put together, where she questioned the role of the forum. Perhaps it had too much weight. Well, here's what she actually said to one of the leading columnists in the newspaper. She said, they've got the public officials twisted around their little fingers. And so in some ways what had happened with this forum is that it had become so influential in the community, those that perhaps had an old style of politics were feeling a bit concerned about their power. And that's, I think, a real important part of our model, and I'll explain that more as we go along. So the agenda this morning, I'm going to talk about, give a little perspective on e-democracy. I'm going to talk about the British government coming to town. We're going to go into how issues forums work. I have a few more interviews to share with you. And then part two, we're going to go into some in-depth question and answer. So a little perspective. To me, the term e-democracy is about the use of information and communication technologies by all these different democratic sectors. We heard this morning about you know, what the government's doing online in some communities, about the political parties, about media groups. And it's not about some future status. It's not some vision we're moving toward. It's actually, what do we have now? And one of the things we've found out so far with the internet is it really is accelerating the current trend. So honestly, if people were disenchanted and upset about politics as usual, they're just more upset. In some places where maybe people were becoming more engaged, perhaps now they're actually getting more engaged. But it isn't necessarily that the internet is an inherently democratic technology which changes human behavior. It doesn't create democratic intent, in my opinion. It accelerates things. And so if you're concerned about the direction that democracy and politics are going, one of the ways to intervene is through the internet as well. And so I call this the e-citizen perspective. And often what happens online, think of us, each of you as a citizen. You know, the government's doing something online, the media is doing something, and we're the only ones that put it all together. We're the ones who experience what all these different parts of democracy are doing. And what edemocracy.org, the NGO that I'm involved with, does is we try to actually leverage all of the online work, a lot of the one-way work of government and other sectors, and add interactivity right in the middle. And we found that geography is a key element to how we organize people. I've come to the conclusion after, you know, monitoring all these different efforts with the internet and democracy is that the most democratizing aspect is the ability to organize people and for them to communicate in groups. It's that two-way communication. That is what is different about this medium. So a couple years ago, We got a visit from the Office of the Deputy Prime Minister, and they have a national project called the UK Local E-Democracy Project. And we gave them a tour of Minnesota's e-democracy climate. We have a very aggressive state legislature. Our parliament is very good online. Almost all the information from the process is available. Our media environment is quite strong. But what stood out to them were these citizen forums that e-democracy had started. And we sat down in a meeting. At the end, they said, we would like to create some of these forums in England, and we have money. And it was something that I'd never heard before. We have money. Because this has been, up till this day, has been an all-volunteer initiative. I've been subsidizing my e-democracy time with my speaking, right? And all the other people are volunteers as well. So they gathered some samples, and actually it led to two pilot forums, one in Brighton and Hove, which is a town on the English Channel, and another one in Newham, which is in East London, and it's actually where the Olympic Stadium will be built for 2012. So there's going to be lots of changes coming up in Newham. So a little background. Here's what I told the UK, and here's what I'll tell you now, is that we started in 1994 with the world's first election-oriented website. We're nonpartisan and neutral. So kind of like a journalist, our role is not to be for or against a certain party. Our goal is to bring together information from across the political spectrum. And we launched this thing called the Minnesota Politics email list. And what we discovered was that when the election was over, people kept talking. Well, most people, particularly when the dot-com boom hit, went into like web-centric, you know, content, very much sort of, you know, just content development. That's very, very expensive to produce well-edited content. What we found as volunteers, our job was, as a trusted, neutral host of dialogue, was to basically keep the dialogue going and to keep it from exploding. And we developed rules and guidelines over time, which brings us to today, actually 1998, when we launched the Minneapolis Issues Forum, and when we went local. I heard about the heyday in the educational list as 2002, and you have that where certain forums have a high point, and then maybe you adjust. And so our statewide forum had its high point in 1997, but going local actually allowed the forums to be even stronger, more agenda-setting, more attractive to a broader cross-section of the population, and I'll talk more about that. So why do you need an online issues forum in your community? Well, I believe we need effective citizen engagement from any time, at anywhere. Anytime, anywhere. You shouldn't have to go physically to a public meeting in order to have a voice. You shouldn't have to give money to political parties or to candidates to have a voice. You should be able to, if you have children in the home, if you're disabled, if for some reason you can't get out, you should be able to participate and have your voice heard. Not to replace in-person politics, I mean, face-to-face, there's strong value in that, but to complement and to actually allow anytime, anywhere participation. We need issues forums because we need to allow the sharing of community knowledge of public leaders. That could be an elected official, it could be an appointed official, a civil servant, active citizens, quote, average citizens, whatever they are. But we need to basically learn from one another, have an open environment that allows us to share our knowledge. We also need openness and accountability, and not just for what government's doing or not doing, but for the local media. What are they covering? What aren't they covering? What should they be covering? And importantly in our forums, citizen-to-citizen accountability, to allow citizens to hold other citizens accountable for their views that are expressed, and not just sort of, you know, just simply allow citizens to just complain and complain and complain, but to actually allow them to hold each other accountable. What I have found that globally is that most of the nonpartisan e-democracy projects, the ones that are non-advocacy based, are in government and sometimes in media, but a lot of them are fairly expensive models. So e-consultation, as you mentioned, is a fairly labor-intensive activity. For the next 3 weeks, we want input on this draft document. Here is a survey. We're going to analyze it. We're going to get back to you with a report. You know, it takes staff time. And it's important to do those types of things. But I believe that issues forums sort of prime the pump. They start the building the skills of e-citizenship. And it makes these more advanced efforts like e-consultations more cost-effective. Finally, another point is that most citizens that are active online are activists. So they're for or against something. They call it NIMBY, not in my backyard. So if you go to Yahoo groups or a lot of different websites, a lot of them are against this highway development. They're against this or against that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is how people will naturally use the internet to advocate their positions. The question is, maybe there's something that we can do in between all this advocacy that sort of brings things together. We heard this earlier. Most local forums are anonymous. Now, in the U.S., they're very rarely sponsored by government, but the ones that often do exist are on media websites. A lot of them talk about sports and things like that, not so much on public issues. Or they're started by an individual who is like the lord and master. It's really a private space where they own it, but they let you are in it, and they might kick you off because they don't like you. Blogs are kind of like that, individual weblogs. They tend to be run by one person, and it's up to them what the discussion happens there. And a lot of the local forums are web-only, and I'll get more strongly into that, but I am a big believer in email, or at least email options. I mentioned this already. Basically, I think issues forums are a cost-effective starting point. It's a foundation for your community. Blogs, right? So in the United States, all you hear about is blogs, blogs, blogs. And I believe blogs are really important. In fact, only like less than 20% are political. Most of them are personal diaries, you know, my travel diary. They're about, you know, my experiences in school, my friends. They're expert blogs. I run a blog on e-democracy on a global basis. I'm an expert on e-democracy. I have a blog. But like I said just a moment ago, forums are two-way, and there's more equality in a forum, where a blog tends to be sort of someone who's more of an elite having something to say. Not always, and we can talk more about that because there are ways to connect blogs. This is a movie poster from The Blob, and I've altered it slightly. The reason the media likes blogs is that it democratizes punditry. So if you think about the people who are on television, the people who write op-eds in newspapers, we've democratized that tremendously with blogs. And particularly at a national level in the United States, there's like kind of a right-wing blog area and a left-wing blog area. It allows them to have at it, and they don't really talk to each other across the party spectrum, but it allows them to attempt to influence the media. And so it's democratized it from the top. I'm interested in democratizing from the bottom. So how do issues forums work? Well, we start with you, the citizen. You have your own personal network, right? And so, you know, you're a private citizen. You have your email address. You have your various networks. And what we do is we define this space. We say, this is an issues forum. We use this software called Group Server, which we've been using for the last year and a half with money from the UK. And it is a combination of an email list and a web forum. One space, two technologies. So you can choose whether you want to use email or whether you want to use web, but you're in the same space. I found that people over 30 are addicted to email. People under 30 hate email, right? So the problem is if you choose one technology over the other, you lose half your potential audience. So the Group Server, I'll show it off in a few minutes. It allows people to choose. But people register. We recruit citizens. We recruit elected officials, the media. I often will say, where is power? And how do we stick an online commons in the center of real power? We don't define these spaces as alternatives. We're trying to go from the center out and be inclusive of all political spectrum, people across the spectrum. People register on the site. They subscribe once. Because the default is email, as an organizer, you don't have to convince somebody to change their web surfing behavior to come back to your website. It just keeps hitting them in the forehead because they're stuck on that email list until the email version until they decide to leave. From an organizer's perspective, that is much stickier. It's much easier to sustain involvement. It also means that people to publish only need know how to push reply. The lowest common denominator of publishing on the net. But instead of being just private to their friends, it's public to the world. Now, we require some rules. We have some important rules. Sign your real name. It's been like that from the beginning. Most sites don't do that, but we have, and we believe in it strongly. I should note that our forums are voluntary. There are many places you can go and be anonymous. We've just chosen this path. We're also not the government, and so if government requires names, it's a little stickier, although I would encourage encouraging real names wherever you can. We also don't allow you to post more than twice a day. People sometimes talk about the problem of too few messages. We have the problem of too many messages. And so what this it's a quirky little thing, but basically, if you can only post twice a day, the most active posters aren't going to go back and forth and drive the rest of us crazy. It only takes two or three people on an email list to go boom, 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 and we leave. So the tragedy of the online commons is when people put too much into it and actually destroy it, to take drive away the audience. The other thing that happens is that somebody will start a discussion topic, and they may be really enthusiastic, but they realize they only have one more chance that day to reply. They hold back. You end up getting three or four or five other participants. So you diversify the number of opinions in the discussion before it ultimately, as they say, gets driven into the ground or comes to a conclusion. Each forum has a charter, and we basically say this is a place to discuss Minneapolis issues, St. Paul issues, not to discuss George Bush or the war in Iraq, unless it's specific to the local community. So sometimes, for example, like with the run-up to the Iraq War, there were resolutions in front of our city council before against the war. At that time, yes, it was appropriate to talk about that issue because it was before the city council. That's very important because without that local scope, none of the elected officials or the civil servants would participate because it would be a complete waste of their time. So we really have to make sure that it has that local focus. We also have these forum managers, and we're going to talk a lot more about that in part two. But basically, they can give warnings to people for violating rules. We do not pre-moderate. We do not approve each message before it's distributed. But if people violate the rules, they can get it. They can get a warning. If they can get they get two warnings within a year, they're suspended for 2 weeks. Three warnings within a year, 6 months. And so we have this process that allows us as volunteers to manage the forum. People have the right for, I call it virtual civil disobedience. I mean, someone could decide to challenge us, to challenge what we do, or whatever, go against our rules. We can't technically stop them. We've decided not to. But they can also get a warning for that. And so it limits our power, but also we still have the right to kick somebody out for abuse of their responsibilities. So a couple more points on this diagram. It's not what you email, it's who you email. It's not who you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? So basically, what's important for an issues forum is that you got the mayor subscribed, that you have lots of citizens, that you have local journalists, that you have activists, that you have, it says the word gadfly, you know, the person who's a little bit an activist of a negative sort. You have all those different types of people on the forum. That's what gives it value. It creates the incentive for quality. If people don't know or don't have a sense that the forum matters, then they'll treat it like it doesn't matter. You have to make the forum matter, and that creates an incentive then for more diverse audiences to participate, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. I have these little blobs on the side here, little secondary networks. It's kind of dark there, but basically the idea is that email leaks. Now with the web access, we have lots of web readers as well. But basically, you know, if I've had times where I've posted to the forum and gotten a private reply from a city official because it was forwarded by a city council member and they asked, could you please respond to Steve about his question? That's really important because most political communication is private or behind the scenes and it's via email. And this way the forum fits right into how people naturally communicate within organizations. Very important. So on our website, we have some videos, and I'm going to play a couple. It's called the eDemocracy.org Experience, again, funded by the UK project. We also have a guidebook, and I know that there are going to be some copies available, but you can download it for free off of our website, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But let me play a little video here from Dory.
The forum was a great help to us. First of all, it made it very clear to everybody in the city that there was a problem here. And so we got a lot of people who didn't believe us at first, and after a while we convinced them to take a ride down here and find out what we were talking about. And then, from then on, the organizing was easy because of the forum, because we could contact all sorts of people. We got all sorts of sympathetic citizens. And we knew, too, that the city council and the county board and the legislators are lurking back there, seeing what's coming up on the issues forum. And so they knew what we were talking about also. Issues forum just made it a lot easier for us. It's much better than telephoning. It's just better. And that's why I'm in this neighborhood, is because it's a neighborhood full of activists. We don't let anything get put over on us.
And what she's talking about there is they created the world's first, or the nation's first, urban ethanol plant. It was a brewery that brewed beer, and to keep it afloat, they said, well, let's make ethanol, and it made half the city smell. And it's now bankrupt, and it closed. But the forum was a place where they could come and let the rest of the city know about how bad it was, how people were getting headaches and different environmental issues from the smell from the ethanol plant. There's actually a 10-minute video about the forum being used for that discussion. In Minneapolis, over the years, we have 20, 30,000 Somali immigrants that live in Minneapolis, the largest collection of Somalis outside of Mogadishu, apparently. And I've done some outreach to them. We do have a lot of diverse voices in the Minneapolis forum, but the Somalis were missing. But then we had a bus strike. And their community was dramatically impacted because they are big users of public transportation. And they joined the forum, and they posted to the forum, and I'll let you hear about that.
Well, one of the main reasons we participate is that it's very informative, and in order to be able to know what's going within the city and within the city hall, the decision-making groups. So it has been, as far as we're concerned, very informative, very educational, very good way to get the words out. So it's been very helpful to the community, Somali community, as far as our office is concerned. For instance, when the transit bus was on a strike, we put the impact it has on the community on the farm, and then we, because of that, we get calls from the mayor, from the Star Tribune, from city council members, because they're also part of this communication process. And it has really been very useful, by simply putting the community's concern and impact it has on the bus strike on the Minneapolis forum. And out generated phone calls and meetings.
And the key there was that after they posted to the forum, they received phone calls from the mayor. They were invited to meetings. The media thought, oh my gosh, this is a story. We have to cover this. And the forum allowed their voice, their community, to get out across the whole community. Agenda setting. Getting into the news, being part of that cycle, is very important. There are currently 768 individual members on the Minneapolis Forum that are subscribed. There are many more visitors via the web. That's only a small percentage of the 400,000 residents of the city of Minneapolis. I should note that that's the biggest city in a 3 million person metropolitan area with many, many different cities. So that media influence is very important, because it democratizes our e-democracy forum even further. In 2001, R.T. Ryback announced that he was going to run for mayor, and he announced on the forum before he announced it at an in-person press conference. He went on to win the election. Here we had an article in the local newspaper about the forum becoming a force in politics, just an article on the forum itself, which is important to get that recognition. And not so much recently. He was reelected recently, but he doesn't post quite as much as he used to, but over time he's been an active participant and continues to monitor the forum, as well as have his communication staff post announcements to the forum as part of their job. So I'm going to post, I'm going to do two little videos from the mayor here. I'll describe these other two first. They had a major budget shortfall. They were able to explain things online in more detail than they could over television, for example. So they found the forum very useful for informing the public about budget cuts. He's also used the forum to gather ideas. He said, some people think we should do have the first urban cross-country ski race in the country, and that idea came from the forum They also got volunteers to help build a mountain biking into one of our parks, and so using it to gather ideas. So I'll play these two videos here.
You know, the primary way that government gets feedback is through the 7 o'clock meeting, if you will. And that works for some people. It doesn't work for other people. There's always the example of underrepresented communities not being able to get to that meeting where we get citizen input. There's also the issue of, just as a parent, I remember when my neighborhood was going through its planning process, we were raising kids. We weren't going to 7 o'clock meetings. Does that mean we're disenfranchised? I say this because all of that becomes leveled somewhat by having an online forum. In public office, you have to keep reminding yourself that the issue in communication is two-way. It's not just what am I saying, but what am I getting back? And if you do it right, you can become far smarter if you have the knowledge of all the citizens out there. I think as an elected official, you have to constantly give yourself a pep talk of saying, I'm getting better, what doesn't kill me will make me better. Because sometimes, you know, people go after you. But that's important.
He raises a very important point that the former prime minister mentioned as well. I mean, why would politicians bother? And what RT has taken is that democratic perspective that basically says, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. And a willingness to expose yourself to differing ideas. And it's that question about sort of a democratic society being represented online and having people become more comfortable with criticism, more comfortable with dialogue. And there are many other elected officials in Minneapolis who don't participate. They monitor the forum, but they are very nervous about engaging in dialogue. And I often give advice to elected officials, and a key tip is this. Don't engage in a one-on-one debate on the forum. If you have a question or raise an issue, raise it, share some information, and then hold back for a couple of days. Let other participants carry water for you. Let them defend you. And then come back into the discussion as a whole and address the substance of the dialogue. But a lot of politicians are afraid they're going to get in a tit-for-tat, they call it. And you can avoid that. And that's what I've seen RT and others do, is they intelligently use the forum. And the reason they use the forum is that they know that it matters. It's that whole issue of putting it in the center of real power and ensuring that the forum matters, because politicians are pragmatic. Political leaders are pragmatic. They'll use the medium that they think they need to use in order to get their message through. And you want to have your online forum matter that way. So today on Issues Forums, the numbers are slightly out of date. We now have over 700 members in Minneapolis. We have four in Minnesota. Roseville, Minnesota, that was actually funded by the local government as a launch. It's part of our NGO, but the government paid to have it launched as part of a visioning process for the future of their community. And that's kind of an exciting opportunity to think of how a community might want to bring an issues forum into their town. I saw the gentleman from NISA, is it NISA? The local government representative. He had a Lions Club pin on his lapel. Think of the local e-democracy committee is a Lions Club or a Rotary Club, a group of citizens that come together for the benefit of their community. In Brighton and Hove, Newham, and now actually a neighborhood in Bristol, we have our forums in England, and we're actually trying to get more communities to join us in an expansion, perhaps 10 new forums in the next year. We shall see. I've just received a fellowship from a group called the Shoka, which is actually going to allow me to work full-time on issues forums. Instead of having to talk to governments, which I enjoy and I still will do, I will be a citizen 100% of the time building out the network of forums. This is what the web version of the forum looks like when you go right into the messages. It's kind of small, but just some topics from Brighton. And actually, I'll take 1 minute and actually go onto group server and show you some live examples. We're talking about money for roads, about smoking in the city, about bicycle stands, recycling, electoral reform, water quality is a big issue in Brighton, an indoor skate park. The Those are all things that have been talked about over last year, but that was over the course of about a week. There's lots of different topics. So I'm going to go in and we'll go in live. It's always dangerous, but I'll show you exactly what's going on. I won't hide any truth from you. So this is the St. Paul Forum. I'll make the fonts larger here so everybody can see here. One moment, please. Nice and big. There we go. All right, so they're talking about neighborhood organization, Ramsey County Mental Health Services, crime fighting. You can tell there's a lot of controversy about this development near the river in St. Paul, and that's what that's involving. Roads, district council elections, different kinds of voting, instant runoff voting, development. But something that's really important to point out is that most people are receiving this via email. But if you click, I'll go to this one. It's the most recent one. From the web, it's a little bit messed up because of the large font. It actually looks just like a web form. So here's the original post. And that's a long post, a bit too long. There's a reply. See, there's his name. If you click on that, I don't know whether Javier, I'm not registered. I'm not logged in. I'll log in. But everyone has a member profile, and so he's from West Side. So he chose not to do a biography, but we want to have more of that type of connection so you can find out who are these people. All right, so you see here, this says show remainder of email. This is important to point out because the problem with email is you get all, they call excess quoting. I'm being kind of a geek here, but basically you get all the junk from the last person. And on the web, it looks terrible. With group server, we hide all of that junk. And so that's the key. So if you're a techie out there, you're like, oh, email looks bad on the web. That's the key thing that makes the email web option work at the same time. So those are some examples there of that. In Brighton, this is, I'll point out this, we also use a wiki on the side so people can add and remove and whatever different community pages. One problem with wikis, sometimes we get spam. Luckily, there's no spam on that page. But it's really easy. People can just push edit and add links to their local websites. In St. Paul, they also have a citizen's guide. They've been developing sort of some static content. I should note here the form is exactly the same. This is from an RSS feed. This is the headlines from the forum, and you can put them anywhere. So you could, if a local government here wanted to have the headlines on their webpage but have the forum on a different server, they can do that. And so when I click on this, it's actually going to take us right to the forum. That's really important because that's how weblogs work. They have these web feeds. I'm getting kind of geeky, I know. But basically, we're part of that ecology. We're not just an email list. We're not just a web forum. We actually get into all the different spaces that web blogs are in as well. So you'll find us on Technorati and sites like that. Our content gets pulled in there. It's important to note that. With one of the challenges, if you want your forum to matter, it has to be as visible as possible. And we do that. So a couple of things. Geography is sort of our key element, very important. Group server is also open source, and so one of the goals is to have other people use the tool, and I won't say anything more about that. I showed you the web view a little bit, and then you can also reply via the web. So that's very important as well, email or web. You can reply either way. And then, here's what it looks like in my mailbox. So same post, and it just, again, mentions how you have a choice. You can play with the tool at onlinegroups.net. So let's get back into how to start one of these things. And anyone have any questions so far? Yes.
How do you verify your users that they are real people and they are citizens of this
location? Great question. The question was, how do we verify the identity or where they live? Well, first, you don't have to live in the city to talk in the forum, so we don't necessarily need to know that, except that our rules say sign your real name and neighborhood and city or city. The way we verify is that when someone signs up, we ask for their first name and their last name, and that automatically becomes their username. And if we determine that that we don't think they are who they are, we suspend their account. So we are not verifying up front that they are who they say they are. But the way we're secure in our knowledge that identity exists is that if someone actually knows something, somebody should know who they are. And so when a name comes from out of the blue and the person is quite knowledgeable about a certain issue, because what happened once is that somebody got removed from the forum for violating the rules and she came back as her cat. Well, what issues did she talk about? She talked about the issues that she had talked about before she was kicked off. And someone happened to know her cat. And what we did was we say, hey, we know it's you. What we had to do really, and as an emergency, we had to strengthen our rules. So, because before the rules actually said, if you can prove that somebody isn't who they say they are, then we'll do something. Now it's if we don't see you in the phone book, if we look up on you in a public database and you don't have a driver's license, if we can't find your name anywhere in any of the records for the city, it's very easy for us to turn off your account. And if we do find out who you are, you will be removed from all of our forums for 5 years. It's basically a death penalty on the forums. And we've never had to do that. But we have had a couple of times in St. Paul recently where someone came as somebody else. They didn't read the rules fully. And it's a fundamental threat to the civility of our forums, because the people who come in with aliases are the ones that are generally there to attack other people and to do things that generally don't fit our civility guidelines. And it's a choice that we've made, and I think it's the best choice that we've made, because we're basically using the accountability of the real world to bring civility. This is public life, not private life, public life. When you stand up in the public forum, you are who you are. Now, I should say, though, that Minnesota is a very safe democracy. We don't have a history of totalitarian rule. We don't have a history of people having even physical retribution for their opinions. It's a fairly open society. So it's easy for me to say this and to know that if we did this in China, the people who hosted the forum, the people who posted to the forum, they'd all be in jail. You know, so it works in our environment.
Mis jääb ju ikka üles, et kindlasti on näiteks päris vaimukas võtta mõne konkureeriva poliitiku nimi, ma arvan ka Minnesotas, ja siis selle nime alt kirjutada sinna kõiksugust, mis võiks inimesi üles ärritada. Et kui palju teie kogemuse järgi seal identiteedivargusi ette tuleb?
We've had no cases of someone pretending to be someone else, except we did the same time we had someone in St. Paul, we think using an alias. That person was creating accounts for dignitaries in the community and posting for them. So they're real posts from real people, but they were basically an intermediary, and it was in support of a candidate for sheriff. And it was kind of touchy. So it was close to that. But they weren't actually falsely impersonating. They were basically, you know, kind of, they were manipulating the form in some way, and we had to deal with that issue. Yeah. So how to start one? Quick step. So say you wanted to go home to your town and create one of these. You need a steering committee, 4 or 5 people. You need to draft a charter, which is, you know, what's the purpose statement? Those 2-3 sentences that describe any forum are absolutely essential. It is very difficult to change a charter once a forum is opened. Why do people on the media forums resist, you know, having to sign their real names, or why don't they like registration? Because it wasn't that way before. Changing a forum dramatically is more difficult. It almost makes sense to start a new forum if you plan to have a major change in rules. We do update our rules every couple of years. We have like a participatory process. We say, how are they working for you? We do some surveys, and we basically try to come up with adaptations. We currently have 13 rules, and I'll actually share some of those later during part 2. Need a forum manager. I mean, without a forum manager, our model doesn't work very well. Someone who basically adjudicates, deals with conflicts among members. Because basically, we're defining rights for participants. But sometimes the rights come into clash. You know, basically the right to a freer speech, right? You know, and sometimes that turns into a heated conversation, a personal conflict. We need to have someone who has the authority to step in. Now, the steering committee holds that forum manager accountable. That forum manager does not have the right to do whatever they want. They actually are accountable as well. Then it's the recruitment stage. You have to. We require 100 people on a forum before we open. If you can't do the work to get 100 people to say they want to be a part of it, you're probably not going to succeed. That, and it's a, another one of those weird things that we do, and it works. It means that more people can say, I was there from the beginning. It means that you can get elected officials and media and other folks to join before they get too nervous about the number of messages. And once they're there, they don't leave because they realize it's part of what they do. And it's just it helps you bring them in. Then you can also manage the launch process. The problem with a lot of really email lists is that you get this, like, people join, big spike in conversation, big volume, people start complaining about the volume, some people drop off, then you have the first fight, a conflict, and it blows up, you know, and then the list dies. Most political discussion lists last, you know, 1, 2, 3 months. Ours are designed to hopefully last for years. And so the challenge actually is to dampen the opening, to actually kind of slow it down and have that, instead of being 3 days of excitement, have it be 2 weeks of steady introductions, getting people to sort of say who they are and introduce themselves to the forum. Because basically, you know, when you're in someone's email box, it's like you're going into their home, right? And, you know, so we really want to build up that respect and that understanding that you're accessing people directly. So I've talked about all these different things here there below. The other thing that we're looking to do in our local communities is to do some yearly town hall events, so like an online consultation, and take some special topics. Our forums are multi-topic, like a newspaper. When you open it up, it's called serendipity. You might be interested in that article, but you're exposed to all these different topics. That's what you get in a local online forum. You get educated on all the diverse topics in the community, which is actually much more like what a representative or elected official feels. They're being bombarded by every interest group in the community or every different interest. Now as a citizen, suddenly you see all those interests intertwine in a dialogue. Very important. So to finish up part one here, I have another story. Do you remember that state of the United States, like in 1998, that elected that pro wrestler as governor? Remember that? Jesse Ventura. So we elected in Minnesota this pro wrestler, my home state, as governor. And our statewide forum was a buzz. I mean, no one expected that outcome. And our city forum in Minneapolis was very quiet, very quiet. So I posted a message. I said, I've noticed more and more squirrels in the city. Is it possible that squirrels in a high density might be a public health risk? Now, I had a smiley face, because, you know, it's not what people would expect. It launched the most dynamic discussion the forum had ever had to that point. And the question is, why? Because it related to people's lives. Everyone has a squirrel story. Oh, I got in my attic and it ripped everything up. Oh, you know, this happened or that happened. Or my kids love to feed the squirrels. It related to people. And in fact, a newspaper, the day after I posted, I get a call from the St. Paul newspaper. We're doing a story on squirrels. We understand you're an expert. And then 2 weeks later, we're with animal control in the city. We understand you're having trouble with squirrels. When does the government call you? So better government service as well. So a couple highlights here. So they had a discussion. Normally it's serious. They say, go to hardware store, buy trap, set trap, kill squirrel. End the public policy question. Grab a trap and kill the squirrel? Why must we destroy a living thing? Remember Rocky and Bullwinkle, the cartoon? So Rocky the squirrel. Rocky and his friends are out of control. Try to eat a sandwich on a bench in Loring Park. And someone else said, hey, quit telling people to move their squirrels to our areas. We already have enough. Now, a city council member actually posted this final message. I ran on an anti-squirrel platform for a student legislature at Syracuse University. I promised to eradicate the squirrel population. It was my first election loss. So we had a little politics as well. So one of the things that we've often found, oddly enough, is that when people talk about animals, wildlife coming into the city, it really lightens things up. So if you're running an issues forum and people are getting a little nasty about some education policy or something, some issue, talk about animals. I don't know. I mean, one of the things that we, it has to be, you know, environment related or something, but the key thing there is you can introduce topics as a forum manager and as a participant. And the more people you get on the forum that see their role as, let's talk about something new, grabbing a link from the media, grabbing a story idea, that really helps create a sense of ongoing momentum. Very, very important. So that's part one, and I have some assignments now for you. I have a conclusion here. Okay, local, must be authentic, good enough. All right, so there's some other models that I want to mention, and then we're going to do some small groups, and you're not going to have to move or anything like that, but issues forms, that's one model, many to many. We've also done online candidate debates. It's like an online consultation. Think of it, you know, invite five experts onto a virtual stage on any policy topic. Have them do a Q&A for a week, and then invite the public in to have a discussion. You can use the internet to create very structured, value-added online events. They're more resource-intense, but they create more value in a short time frame. E-debates or online events also generate media attention, like any physical kind of conference. In this case, we had four major themes. I know you have an election coming up here next year, so maybe you can adapt this idea. We did short answer questions because people like that. And we also allowed the candidates to do their opening statements via YouTube with video. And we also allowed them to do their rebuttals via telephone. They could call them with their mobile phone, and we converted that to an audio file, an MP3 audio file, and also transcribed that into text if they took that option. And on those four major themes, we required rebuttals. This is kind of odd, but we basically said, you must rebut. But without a rebuttal, it's not a debate. And the most a candidate normally would do the main answer and often not do a rebuttal because, well, you know, they have to actually read the other candidate's responses. And we required that. And some candidates did come in short saying, well, you know, not much more to say on this, but at least they acknowledged that. This is what it looks like. We actually use weblog software, and so the videos show up this way, and the ones that did text are in text. For responses during the debate, we said go to our Voter Voices page, and there you could upload videos into YouTube, pictures into Flickr, where, you know, photo album sharing. If you had your own blog, we were aggregating your posts, and I'll show that off for a second because it's important to note that we too are getting pressure to begin to be more multimedia, not just be text only. And so the idea was that we introduced this tag, MN Politics. No one used this keyword for anything else, and so now that we introduced it, we're getting lots of people to use it on their videos and on their photos. And so there are 122 videos that are uniquely tagged MN Politics where there was zero before, and now we can provide a window into that. So now at the local level, we're planning to have a tag for each community so that we can allow people from our online or email web discussions to also share photos, to share videos, and to have that complement the text-based dialogue. I'm going to keep scrolling down here. We shared links via a site called Delicious. Here is our statewide forum. And all this is being fed by web feeds. And then, like, every day there's, like, 100 different posts about the election from the Google blog search that came up in our system. So it really became a one-stop shop for what's going on today, what's the pulse of the election. And to be honest, people did not use it to respond to the debate directly. It was more of a general space, but it worked. So finally, a couple more models here to point out. I mentioned we use a wiki. That's important, a different way of interacting. I also use Group Server for online communities of practice. I got an email recently from the New Zealand government asking me, you know, we're going to do an online engagement on e-participation. Any advice? And so, very similarly, I said, make sure that you do recruitment before you open. A lot of times, when governments do online consultations or anyone does an online event, they release a press release the day they open the forum, and everybody who goes to it, because online consultations tend to be mostly web-based, every time they go to it, everybody at the same time is saying, nobody's talking, there's nothing happening here. You should spend 2, 3, 4 weeks before you open recruiting, having them sign up at least on an email newsletter so you can tell them what's new, and then get 3 or 4 of your friends the day you open to post. You know, don't make fake posts, but make sure that when people log in, when it's announced in the media, there's actually life in your online consultation. Very important. And I call those online events, and I have an article on my site about that. And I think this is the final additional model. in Northfield, Minnesota. It's also in Minnesota. It's not part of our organization. They're encouraging community members to do blogs as well. But there, they're getting people who do, I guess, civic blogs. They have two models. They have a neutral blog, which is this one you see here, where it's from a neutral point of view. It's like citizen media. People can comment on the pieces there, and they also like to mix in a lot of photos. And then they're aggregating. They're gathering all the different blog feeds. So there's like, what, 20 different local bloggers in a town of 20,000 people? And these are blogs, not just, you know, my diary, you know, my I had a great hamburger at McDonald's. It's people talking about community development, people talking about education, people talking about things, you know, from different positions in the community. And so it's a very interesting project, and it's a sort of another way to look at broad interactivity. So I'm going to grab a glass of water here. All right, so I have an assignment for you for the next, what time is it here? For the next 7 minutes until 22. It's going to be very simple. We're going to do groups of two. And so basically the person that you're next to, if for some reason there's no one next to you, just talk to the person behind you. Or you two can talk to each other. And here's the assignment. I'm going to break you up into more than nine groups. So basically, if people in this row would talk about number one and number two, you guys are going to get 3 and 4, 5 and 6, and 7, 8. Let's see. I'll give you 9 as well, all right? Double duty. All right, and so the assignment is basically this. Have a discussion amongst yourself and come up with either a technology or your own rule that you think would encourage, for example, an increase in the diversity of opinions or the increase of participation by women, for example, or group 3 and 4. What rule or technology might encourage an elected official to post more often or might increase the respect among members? Number 5 and 6, how might you, with technology or your rules, make it easier to find value more quickly or move people toward consensus or at least allow people to agree that they disagree? I don't have the answers for all these, so hopefully you'll help me figure some of these things out. And then the final group, how do you avoid alienating political minorities, perhaps while knowing what the majority believes? How do you hold forum managers more accountable? And this is, and also come up, maybe as a group we'll do number 9. Anybody who has an idea at the end will ask for this. How would you destroy a forum? What are the best things that you can do? Because as a host, we need to think about how you defend ourselves against the good ideas that you might have about how to destroy a forum. So, talks amongst yourselves. And what we're going to do then is randomly go around the room and ask you for what you came up with. And so please write down your one rule and your best technology idea, and we'll try to get as many of those out of the audience. And then if you have any questions as well, you know, you've been wanting to ask, maybe come up with a question, and then we'll use those questions to finish off the rest of the session. Okay, so talks amongst yourselves. Okay. We're going to come back together now. I see we have a group there that's really deliberating. Perhaps they can help us set the standard. So briefly, would someone from your group like to stand up and give a quick response to their questions?
Meil olid need esimesed kaks punkti, arvamuste mitmekesistamine. Ja tegelikult selle lühikse aja jooksul me väga palju selle teise juurde ei jõudnud, aga otsapidi küll. Üks idee oli see, et tõstatada seal foorumis huvitavaid küsimusi, mis on võib-olla iseenesest mõistetav, et see kutsub ka sinna foorumisse inimesi, kes on võib-olla teist, noh, laiema arvamuste ringi esindama. Ja teisest küljest, et kasutada muid kanaleid, mitte seda foorumit ennast, vaid muid kanaleid selle populariseerimiseks. et no näiteks Eesti puhul üheks probleemiks on see, et kuigi me oleme Euroopas üks üle keskmise interneti kasutuselt, siis eriti, mis puudutab väiksemaid valdasid, nagu me siin hommikul kuulsime ka, et interneti kasutajate protsent elanikkonnast on küllalt väike, ütleme 10%, et just maapiirkondades. Et seal võiks aidata see, et kasutada traditsioonilisi meediaid, näiteks kas või omavalitsuse lehte. Teine asja, mis on meil väga levinud, on avalikud internetipunktid. Et kuigi see võib tunduda nagu ajast tagasi astumine, siis võib-olla võimalus, mis võiks inimesi meelitada nii foorumites osalema, kui siis ka üldse võib-olla interneti juurde tervikuna, on see, et nendes avalikes internetipunktides, mis on tihti raamatukogudes, panna lihtsalt need arutelud paperil trükituna ülesse. Ja sinna juurde viide, et osale ka tule internetti. Et võib-olla sellega saaks isegi mitu kärbest ühe hoobiga lüüa. Kuigi meile, kes me kasutame, tundub see võib-olla tobe ja milleks printida internetti välja, siis ma arvan, et selleks, et seda arvamuste ringi laiendada ja inimeste ringi, kes kasutavad internetti ja foorumeid, et see võiks olla üks hea idee. Et nad sealt külapoe tagant, mis me enne kuulsime, tuleksid ka sinna interneti foorumisse ja mine tea, võib-olla see kvaliteet ka kasvab sellest.
Thank you. Would anyone else from this question group have something to add in terms of what you came up with? Any other ideas, technologies, thoughts? I see we have a hand up here and then that means that you're going to have to help answer your questions as well. Oh, yes.
I just have an idea. I would like to add to your idea that when people are interested in these topics that are printed out, but when they want to reply, they would have to use the public computer. Why? Because this is also to increase their use of the computers. So if they see something they really want to say about the local corrupt politicians, the only way to reply to this is to use the local public computer. So this, I think this is a really good idea. Also putting the local community website as the starting home page. So thank you.
So who would like to talk about making posting by elected officials more likely in this column here? Let's head this way. And what did you guys come up with on that? Or increasing respect? Any highlights here? I'm going to randomly grab somebody if, there you go, he's ready.
Et tegelikult on ju niimoodi, et nad rohkem hakkaksid selles keskkonnas käima, on ju vaja tekitada see, et selle oleks mingi tähendus. Ja loomulikult meie nagu üks mõte oli see, et kui meil on mitmed uudiste agentuurid, kes ootavad vihjeid nii-öelda, et teha mingit uudislugu, siis sealt tuleks lingid teha sellelt foorumilt, et kui see hakkavad sealt mingid lood uudistesse minema, siis loomulikult hakkavad valitud ka huvi tundma. Loomulikult kõik ülejäänd asjad, mis siin juba on kõlanud, et see selles foorumis tuleks suuta kaasata võimalikult palju selliseid inimesi, kelle arvamus korda läheb, erinevaid nii-öelda, noh, nimetame kas või arvamusliidriteks, aga seda on kergem ütelda kui teha muidugi. Nii et see, ma ei tea, kas on see tehnoloogiline lipp, aga nendele vihjetelefonidele ja vihje nendele meilidele siis jah, lingid teha ja siis kui ikka mingid teemad hakkavad sealt kasvama välja meediasse, siis on valitud kindlasti kohal.
Ma võiks lisada ainult nii palju, et ühelt poolt ka meie rääkisime sellest nii-öelda surve avaldamisest, aga piltlikult öeldes see on, kuidas ma ütlen, see on selline jõupoliitika. Et paraku me ka sellistest positiivsetest vahenditest eriti jõudnud rääkida ja küsimus oli ka pigem selles, et ühesõnaga kuidas saada selleks, et survet avaldada, peab sellel keskkonnal olema mingisugune jõud ja meie jõudsime ka samasse punkti, et nii-öelda praegusel juhul saab seda ühelt poolt teha ajakirjandus, aga teiselt poolt eks me vist oleme näinud ka neid juhtumeid, kus ajakirjandus ütleme siis niimoodi, et suudetakse ka seda ajakirjandust selles mõttes niimoodi kallutada, et see surve jookseb reaalsusest mööda või? Aga kõikide vahenditega, mis mina ütlen ainus, on tegelikult on järjepidevus. Meil on mitmeid häid asju kasutatud, aga nii ongi, nagu tuleb esimene tagasilöök, need unustatakse ära. Just nimelt järjepidevusega, kui ka ajalehed, siin ütleme näiteks Postimees tegi kohalike valimiste ajal ja noh, ma ei oska öelda, kuidas nad nüüd järgmiste valimiste ajal jätkavad, et inimestel tekiks selle keskkonna kasutamise kogemus. Kui seda kogemust ei teki, siis ongi niimoodi, et emba kumba tähendab, kas keskkond on, aga tal ei ole seda jõudu taga või kui mingiks hetkeks on jõud, aga siis ei ole seal külastajaid. Nii et järjepidevusega tuleb nagu korjata mõlemad pooled kokku, ühelt poolt see inimeste surve ja teiselt poolt siis ka poliitikud, et nad võtaksid need mängureeglid omaks ja küll nad siis hakkavad seal osalema ja pidevalt ka aru andma.
The point about consistency is very, very important because we have found in our forums that the thing that gets us in most trouble is when one group perceives that they're being treated differently. Conservatives say you're not treating us fairly, the left wing will say you're not treating us fairly, and as long as we know we get a few complaints from all sides, we're doing a good job. But if we get complaints from one ideology more than others, then we need to evaluate how we're dealing with our rules. So we have two more columns here and just a little bit of time. So I'd love to have one person from each group just say a few words. So would anyone in this row like to talk about 5 and 6, the things that you discussed, any highlights?
No jah, me arutasime sellest, et kuidas inimesed saaks aru või kuidas nad mõistavad, et sellest foorumist on reaalses elus tõesti tolku. Et eks kõige rohkem annab sellest mõista see, kui asjad tõeliselt muutuma hakkavad reaalses elus. Ja tihti on niimoodi, et mingid teemad tõstatuvad, siis kui see teema on üleval, kõik avaldavad arvamust, aga tavaliselt sel teemal on ka lõpp, et seda ei kajasta keegi. Või kui on mingi probleem, et kui kehtestada foorumis selline reegel, et kui sa kritiseerid, et sa pead pakkuma ka lahenduse. Ja tehnilistest lahendusest äkki selline variant, et neid lahendusi saaks panna kas mingi kallupi või hääletuse foorumis nagu anda neile hinnangut teiste lugejate poolt. Sellised asju.
Here about holding forum managers more accountable, alienating political minorities or not.
7. punkt, ma sain aru, me nüüd ei arutanud siin oma vahel midagi, lihtsalt paar oma mõtet ütleks, ma ütlen, see punkt on kuritahtlik, sellepärast, et poliitilist diskussioonis sul ei ole võimalik diskussiooni pidada, kui sa kogu aeg mõtled, mida mõtleb vähemus, kellele sinu ideed ei meeldi. Selles samas hariduse listis, millest Raivo Juurak meil siin rääkis, on mitu korda üles tõusnud integratsiooni küsimused. Ja kuna meil on ka venelased kaasas, siis võtavad osa, siis kujutad ette, et see on väga hell teema. Aga seda hella teemat ei saa arutada niimoodi, nagu on kogu aeg käitunud kõik meie valitsused ja kõik meie riigikogu koosseisud, et rahvusküsimus istutakse nagu munakorvi otsas ja ei ole, et asju nimetada oma nimedega. Ja nii see integratsiooni protsess tammub ka, nii nagu lihtsalt sõdurid savis ja ei lähe ja ei lähe ja ei lähe, kui kogu aeg käiakse ümber ringi ja ei püüta sattuda selle asja olemuse juurde. Ja täpselt samuti on see 7. punktis, kui me poliitilist diskussiooni peame selge, osa parteisid on enamuses, teised on vähemuses, mõni on hoopis kusagil äärepeal, no mis moodi sa selle äärepeal oleva partei seisukohti saad arvestada, kui sa oma ideesid propageerid. Tänan tähelepanu eest.
That was one of the questions where I don't have an answer. On our forums, we do not do a polling because we're afraid that if we find out that a majority believes a certain thing, it might cause the political minority to leave. On the other hand, lots of people kind of want to know more sort of numerically, where do we fall on some issues? And it's an open discussion in our environment, how to be inclusive, but also not to be so inclusive that the forum loses direction in some ways. I have a couple more slides to share in the last couple minutes here. I also obviously would like to get some more questions. And let me just go through these slides very quickly. I've highlighted some of these bits already. In the guidebook, which you can download, or there's some copies here, we have a paper sign-up form. We found that the best way to recruit people to an online forum is with a piece of paper at the proper community events. Build it, they will not come unless you pull them there, drag them there, bring them there. And so that's very important. We've also found that our volunteer model works well, but if you're interested in what they call social inclusion, you know, reaching out to low income or youth or other groups that are maybe less likely to participate, that takes real effort. That's where either government support or a foundation support or a donation might be useful to hire someone to coordinate the volunteer activity. Obviously, if you have a gung-ho, a really excited volunteer, they can do anything, but we found that that's a bit more work than our volunteers are able to do. Another couple tidbits here about the forum manager. So if all of you are forum managers in training, you need a sincere belief in the value of dialogue. You believe in having diverse opinions. You have to be very patient. One of the things we've learned is that if you wait 24 hours, a lot of problems just go away. If you feel like there's a conflict on the forum and you feel like you need to act, sometimes acting causes more trouble than just waiting a day. So knowing when to act. On the other hand, there are times when you need to intervene quickly because you know, we've been down this road before. We have to remind people to be civil. People skills. People who are good at facilitating people in person, they can learn the technology. If someone happens to know technology really well but aren't so good with people, I mean, it's difficult to train someone to be a facilitator in the human way. But then again, if someone is really good with people but are intimidated by technology, they're not going to be good facilitators. I mentioned common sense here, being diplomatic. Sometimes I will help launch conversations by simply asking questions. I'll ask questions about things that I already know the answer for because I know it'll be a good discussion. It's helpful to do that. Asking for more information, guiding the discussion that way. We talk about trying to keep the space safe. That doesn't mean, you know, pure. It doesn't mean nice, but it means that in general that people feel like it's a place where they're not going to be personally attacked. And to be honest, that does happen in our forums, just a lot less than others. And that's really important to get people to be bold enough to stand up and speak. And they often talk about why people won't speak on a forum. People won't speak in person either. I mean, but we want to make it so that there's a reason, less fear. Obviously, the willingness to sort of enforce the rules and to do that consistently, objectively. Keeping the forum on topic. Those are the rules. I'll let you go on the website, but we've come up with 13 different things. I will mention that we have civility and no attacks and threats, but also private stays private. And here's a key thing, is that we're only liable or responsible for what happens in the public forum. But because we use email and web as a mix, with the email, people can reply privately. We cannot be responsible for what happens in a private reply. We may want to know that something's happened, but it's really important that stays private. Also, people should have the decision about whether they want to be public or not. So they send a private reply to someone, you know, responding to someone's post. Having it go back public without their permission is a no-no, and so forth. Lots of different pieces there. And just to finish up here, welcoming new members, helping introduce topics, supporting good behavior, continuing to recruit. And all these tasks could be assigned across your steering committee, those who are involved in the forum. It doesn't all just have to be on one person. It can be split up. But in general, you want one person to enforce the rules. There's always one person that basically can provide that consistency around warnings and suspensions. Technology, I won't get into this right now. I'll just say this, that what you did now in your discussion is you talked about how you want to define an online experience for others, whether it would be with outreach, a rule, some techniques or some technologies. And with the internet, we shouldn't just take what they give us. We should actually build the tools based on our democratic practices and our democratic ideals and be builders of the technology around our goals. And so that's what this basically says. We need to think about and envision how we want it to be better or different and then build it that way, instead of just expecting the internet to be used as it's always been used, or to be used based on sort of a cyber-libertarian view of anonymity and everyone being free to abuse everyone else. That's one view, but you don't have to take that path. So now that we're out of time, I would like to take, can we take two, three questions? Okay, please. So there's time for two or three questions, and then over lunch we can continue to discuss.
Esimene küsimus on kohe liial ja pärast siis kahele küsimusele vastamist ma teeksin omaltki poolt väikese kokkuvõtte.
Nii, minu küsimus on selle steering committee, the role of steering committee. Mis funktsioon sellel on? Sellel, ma ei tea, kuidas see eesti keelde panna, juhtkomitee või?
The role of the steering committee is to draft the charter and to recruit the forum manager. The steering committees often have a chair or co-chairs. And so they're sort of the people that support the forum manager most directly. And outreach, that really needs to be a group activity. But basically, if you have 5 people or 10 people involved in your steering committee, it means that you've had that initial participation so that when the forum launches, it's not just a project of one person.
On kellelgi veel mõni küsimus?
Aga kas te oskate soovitada mingisuguseid teistsuguseid piiranguid kui see, et 2 postitust päeva jooksul? Sest kogemused näitavad, et kui tegelikult hakkab mingisugune diskussioon arenema ja ütleme, seal on reeglina 1 inimene, kes on selle käigus siis kas vedaja või ta on vastavala spetsialist, kes vastab teistele mitu korda järjest, siis tegelikult selle 2 piiranguga lööb koheselt diskussiooni seisma.
In fact, that's a good point, because you could have a guest expert on one of our forums. This happened once where we were doing an online candidate exchange and we basically said the candidates have permission to violate the rule. And the forum manager declared that and it worked that way for that certain time frame. I think the key thing to note is that you could just have the rules work your way. And so it might be that that when certain people are experts on an issue in a Q&A situation, that's okay. It could also be 3 a day. It could be, different types of rules. We actually, technologically, group server, it's actually 2 and 24 hours. And so if you try to post a third time, it just says you need to wait 3 hours before you can post again. So we've kind of taken a rule and turned it into technology. You could change that to 7 a week. and so there's lots of different ways you could envision having it be flexible enough. But basically limit the volume of messages and sort of overused by too few individuals.
Kas kellelgi on veel mõni põletav küsimus, mida kohe ei saa esitamata jätta või hakkame siirduma lõunasöögile? Ühtegi kätte ei näe. Tahaksin tänada Stevenit selle väga selge ja ülevaatliku ja kaasakiskuva esituse eest. Ma arvan, et kõikidel tekis palju mõtteid ja küllap need praktilised näpunäited rakendatakse vähemalt osaliselt ka Eestis ellu. Ja eraldi tahaksin tänada kõiki neid, kes aktiivselt osalesid Steveni korraldatud rühma aruteludes ja seal saavutatud seisukohti ja arvamusi välja ütlesid. Mu enda jaoks jäi ikkagi üles küsimus sellest, et no mis siis seal foorumis osalemisest kasu on. Nii palju vastuseid ma endale sain, et no esiteks kindlasti saab tõstatada teatud teemasid ajakirjandusse, nii nagu näiteks need Somali päritolu inimesed oma probleemid, mis tekisid seoses streikivate bussijuhtidega. Ja küllap võib olla see foorum ka mingis mõttes alternatiivseks ajakirjanduseks, kus kodanikud vahetavad oma vahel arvamusartikleid. Samas kõlas mitmetest sõnavõtudest läbi soovitus, et tegelikult tuleks foorumis osalemist propageerida tänaste meediakanalite kaudu, ehk siis trükki ajakirjanduse, televisiooni ja raadio kaudu. Mul oli vahepeal kuri idee küsida Hanno Tombergilt kui ühelt Eesti juhtivalt ajakirjanikult, kes siin on küll oma tööd tegemas ehk küsimas, aga just tahtsin paluda tal lahkelt vastata, et ega viimati ajakirjandus, kui ta hakkab soovitama inimestel nendes foorumites elavalt kaasa lüüa, ei saa ise endalt oksa, et mida ajakirjanikud sellest mõelnud on. Ja siis lõpetuseks see kõige tähtsam küsimus, et kas foorumites kujunenud avalik arvamus kuidagi ka tegelike poliitilisi otsuseid mõjutab või mida teha selleks, et ta neid võiks mõjutada. Vot see jäi ikkagi üles. Mis on ka väga hea sellepärast, et pärast lõunasööki kell 14.45 loodan, et kõik olete siin tagasi ja järgneb veel kaks väga huvitavat sessiooni. Nii et suur tänu kõigile, head ideede vahetust lõunalauas ja kohtumiseni kolmveerand tunni pärast.